Hello, I'm Lucy Ann Harrison and welcome to Symphonies and Snacks, a podcast where we discuss 20th and 21st century contemporary classical music and eat pun-based snacks. Those were some of the opening bars of Messiaen's Quatuor pour le fin de temps, or Quartet for the End of Time. And with me I have Kim Moore.
Hiya.
Who's going to talk through some of the work with me. Kim is working towards her PhD in maths at the moment. Do you want to tell us any more about that?
You probably don't want to know any more about that, but maths is cool.
There you go, kids. Maths is cool. So how this is going to work is we're going to have a little chat about Messiaen this week, and I've deliberately got a guest with me who's not a music graduate, because it's just more of an interesting conversation that
I
way.
I am very interesting, to be fair.
You are. As you consistently tell everyone, you are very interesting. The Quartet for the End of Time was written between 1940 and 1941. It's for clarinet, violin, cello and piano, and it was written while Messiaen was in a prisoner of war camp during World War II.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, great. We're starting with a cheerful one.
Did he have a piano just lying around? Or?
I think, and I would have to double check this, it's to do with your worth in these camps. So he was given the resources to write a work by the prison guards.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
So they found him the people to work with, and that increased his worth within the camp and made him more viable to keep alive.
Wow.
That's really grim. Really, really grim.
Yeah.
Imagine working in those circumstances. Just...
That would be awful, really.
Like, it's really hard to write on cue. Oh, apologies, there's a lovely plane going in the background there. It's for the atmosphere. It's so that we can really recreate that prisoner of war atmosphere that we've got going.
Lots of planes in war, right?
That's how it works. Oh, God, we shouldn't make light of that. We're starting really well. We are starting absolutely well. Should we talk about the first movement, which we've just listened to? And that one is called... Let me check my notes. It's not called Let Me Check My Notes. That would be a terrible title.
No, probably not.
So the first movement is called Liturgie de Cristal. I should really avoid doing the French titles.
Maybe I should do them. Liturgie de Cristal.
Nice.
I'm good at French.
He is well good. Our school has done us proud here.
Did a year, you know, year nine. Je beat Hanforth, Northwest England. I've forgotten some of it.
Quelle est la date de ton anniversaire? Oh, we should say from here, we've known each other for an extremely long time.
Maybe a little bit too long.
We used to go to Recorder College together.
Woo!
Yeah.
That's what all the wild kids did.
We made the most of our teenage years by playing recorders and going bowling.
Who doesn't love bowling?
I know. Anyway, the Crystal Liturgy, the first movement of the piece for full quartet, so that's introducing the style of the entire work. Obviously, it wasn't his choice of instrumentation, those are the instruments they had there.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a strange combination, not something you traditionally would put together, right?
It's not a vast amount of choice in a prisoner of war camp.
Did they just get other prisoners, do you reckon, who played instruments?
Yeah.
And whatever instruments they could procure?
I think it was quite common, these kind of...
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just what they had and what instruments the guards were able to get hold of. What were your initial impressions?
Well, I'm unsurprised it was written in quite frightening circumstances. It was sort of... I feel like if I was listening to it in a room on my own, I'd be feeling a little bit nervous that someone's about to come and kill me.
It was quite fraught.
Yes, fraught. Good word.
So all of this is based on parts of the liturgy and also, well, the end of time.
Yeah, maybe not the most cheerful topics to have in mind.
A useful fact here would be about Messiaen's faith. Messiaen was very strong Catholic faith, and a lot of his work is around the church and around the liturgy. And he had this in, he did these fantastic organ works as well. But one of the characterising things is the sparseness of harmonic material. Sparseness of harmonic material, to get my words out. And I really felt that in this. It did feel very sparse how it was spread across.
As an aside,
yeah.
How did he find himself a prisoner of war?
He signed up for the French army in World War II.
Right. Prison of war is slightly different to the concentration camps, I guess, that first come to mind.
I am not a historian, as you know, and I'm not claiming to be. I am a composer. My background is music. But I believe there are things in place that control how the prisoners were treated, like prisoners of war were treated, compared to how people in concentration camps were treated.
Yeah, exactly. I don't imagine the Jewish people were necessarily given the same treatment.
Again,
we don't know, but
we don't know. This is wild speculation. We should possibly have done more research before we came to to talk about this subject. So he was captured during the war, when he was fighting for France, and fighting for France did not go well, but that's well documented. Gosh, I sound really unsympathetic about the war. This is not my intention. I'm a nice, well-brought-up person.
The war was bad. We know.
War is bad. We don't condone war in any way whatsoever.
Trouble is, time heals all wounds, right? It's a phrase.
we'll just leave that hanging. very sparse texture. What I really link it to in my head is earlier work by Stravinsky. In this kind of treatment of the different instruments, they all have their separate identity and they are all interacting with each other, but these are very clear in this movement, separate lines that are moving through it.
Mm-hmm.
So at no point are you expected to have a blended sound between them all. They are all very much of their own character and kept separate.
Mm-hmm.
Am I making sense? Because I feel...
No. It's totally, it's like they're four people playing at the same time rather than four people trying to play together in a way. Sort of fighting for the, or just, well, not even fighting for the main part, just sort of getting on with what they're doing without sort of bothering too much about the other people.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they are in actuality really bothered about getting it all at the right time and stuff, but...
Oh, so difficult to get this kind of playing right.
Yeah, to make it sound so sort of casual, in a way.
There's a lot of... I mean, this is early in the 20th century, but there's a lot of diminishing of contemporary classical music of, I can do that, that's easy. Because it's not as grand-sounding as something like Beethoven, but the amount of detail, and when something goes wrong in that kind of piece, my God, you are screwed. And you will just get this panicked feeling of, this is never going to come together ever again. I was really good at performance. This is why I don't do it anymore.
I was never a performer either, don't worry.
Just the pair of us standing awkwardly with our recorders.
Or getting giggle fits. I just...
Yeah.
A mixture of shaking and,
and giggling.
Uncontrollable laughter.
It's really funny being in a recorder orchestra.
Yeah, it's, to be fair.
It's a proper instrument. It's a proper instrument. We spent time, we spent hours, we play it to a very high level. But it is funny.
You don't learn the recorder to the level we did without having a very good sense of humour about it.
Cool. So, you studied music up until GCSE, music tech at A level, as I did. What are your feelings about this piece? This is what interests me, is, you know, we could have musicologists on here, you know, doing a proper analysis of the piece, talking about the harmony and talking about all of these things, but very often you lose the heart of the impression of it. How did you feel about that first movement?
I'm not sure the first movement is going to be my favourite one. I'm not sure it's something I'd want to listen to necessarily, but I've only heard it once. So sometimes I find the more you listen to something, the more sort of depth you find to it. Like, just superficially listening to it once, you can quite easily make a snap judgment with any music, really, like pop music, classical music.
Like, if you just listen to Taylor Swift's Shake It Off once, you go, she's just written Mickey again.
Mm-hmm.
But once you fully dig down into that piece,
yeah,
depth. I'm not being mean about Taylor Swift. I love her, that's true. I have Hidden Shallows. I kind of feel like we're going, so that's the first movement done. But yeah, that's...
Stay tuned.
So that's the first movement done. Let's move on. So that was the second movement of Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time. This is vocalised for the angel who announces the end of time. Do you want to take a run at the French?
Oh. Vocalise pour l'anger qui annonce la fin du temps. God, nail that.
We apologise to all of France. But I'm loving this, and we're going to do it for every movement.
I think I'm practically fluent in French.
So I've just found, as well, some very interesting information on Messiaen's time as a prisoner of war and how he came to be writing this. Yeah. So this is taken from Alex Ross's fantastic book, The Rest is Noise, which is a really good run at 20th century music. The South Bank Centre did a festival based on it recently. And it's really... It's an introductory book, but it puts in everything in really nice, plain terms. So when Messiaen was a prisoner of war, he was in Stalag 8A. Or would you go Acht A?
Do you remember the Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging books that we used to read? And she used to refer to school as, like, Stalag 14. I never got that.
Those books by Louise Renison.
Oh, they're really good. I love them. But I never got that joke.
Well, there you go. Prisoner of War camp.
That makes sense to me now. That happens to me so often.
So there was a guard called Carl Albert Bruhl, who advised French Jewish prisoners not to try to escape on the grounds that they were safer in the prisoner of war camp.
Okay.
He also championed Messiaen and gave him pencils, erasers and manuscript to work on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's quite the luxury.
And he had his duties taken away from him and had access to an empty barracks so that he could compose with a guard to turn away intruders. And they premiered the quartet within the prisoner of war camp.
Oh, wow.
It's a really odd image.
Yeah.
That within such an awful situation, they're premiering new music.
How would you feel listening to that if you knew, like, one of the other prisoners was getting this special treatment, being allowed to shirk their chores? Would you be able to enjoy it? Or
do you think it would be shirking? Because I would feel that it was really to give a very pretentious term. I feel it would be compromising my artistic integrity to work in those kind of...
Yeah, true. Well, I'm not saying that that's what he was doing. I was saying that that's what someone might cynically think. I'm sure he didn't want to Well, I imagine he probably didn't want to work under those circumstances, but...
Also, within here, Alex Ross makes the point, brings up that the phrase used within this is, "There shall be time no longer," which is a biblical phrase. I would imagine taken from Revelations. That would be a useful thing to look up, but my... Oh, I have no excuse. My Bible is in full view. I'm just... Yes, I have a Bible just on my shelf, but I will not be looking it up.
Maybe not.
Because, you know, I'm cool like that. And it was also that guard who helped forge the documents. So Brühl helped forge the documents for Messiaen to be able to return to France.
Wow. He was a real favourite of this guy then.
Well, I mean, he did... For a Nazi guard, he did some other good things, you know, telling the French Jewish prisoners not to try to escape.
Yeah,
because
true.
They were covered, you know, they were safer there. Those kind of things. It's interesting. Second movement. So, the angel announcing the end of time.
Well, the first bit certainly reminded me of Doom.
It was very doomy.
It's a bit weird, because, like, there was sort of almost the three parts. So there was the doom, but then there was this, like, freaky bit, as if something bad was about to happen. I was like, that's weird. It's sort of like the other way around to what you'd expect, but then the doom came back at the end. So I like the word doom.
Such a good word, doom. So we have the opening statement section, which is... the doomy bit. Let's just call it that.
The statement was doom.
And then this very hypnotic centre section. So there's not much variation in the piano parts, and it's kind of goes along. And I've written a note for this about, for me, it reminded me of theremin parts in sci-fi B movies. Obviously, this was written far before sci-fi B movies, but it just seems to have had that influence on later work.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I could imagine it as the background music to a scene where, I don't know, something bad's going to happen to someone somewhere. And I thought something bad was going to happen to me.
you did look terrified when we listened to this one.
The door slammed, I screamed. It's cool.
It was very dramatic. It was dramatic, people. The opening and the end, well, actually the entire piece as well, reminded me of Poulenc's solo work for clarinet.
Sorry, Poulenc.
What part of Poulenc's name is making you laugh?
The poo bit. Poulenc. Sorry. Serious.
This is why I don't have musicians on this. This is much more fun. No offence to you musicians out there, but we have become desensitised to Poulenc. So Poulenc wrote some fantastic solo clarinet work, which is kind of quite a standard bit of repertoire, and it's got that same kind of feeling. It was written later, so it was probably influenced by this. I really sound like I'm not knowledgeable. Just to let everyone know, I have studied for a long time. It's just facts. They disappear. And it's more fun to talk about how funny Poulenc's name is.
It's a funny name.
Because also, it's written Poulenc.
Poulenc.
But that's not how you pronounce it.
Oh, well. Some might say.
Because then you can also get Poulenc, plonk. Yeah, so all the way through, and it's a fantastic clarinet work, the Poulenc, because it has this kind of very fraught opening movement, and then the middle movement is this very, has this very eerie solo clarinet opening. It's this very eerie clarinet line. Did you find the ending to this movement very abrupt?
Yeah, and I don't know, I thought it had ended before the ending as well. It kind of was disjoint in a way, the movement. It was almost like three movements within a movement, if you know what I mean. It sort of did the loud bit and then faded out, and then faded in the eerie bit and then faded out, and then doom again.
Also, that was going nowhere, that sentence.
Also, I think I don't have anything else to say.
No, I did. I did have things to say. Groupings of instruments. So we were talking about in the first movement, they were all working very separately. Mm. Just to say as well, in the first movement, it was based on birdsong, which is something that Messiaen was known for, was yeah. imitating mm-hmm. birdsong. So they were all working very separately. In this movement, in the second movement, we were grouped into, the strings were grouped together, and then the clarinet and then the piano working separately to each other. And you get hardly, you don't get any clarinet in the second movement, I don't think. I might have that wrong. So then the clarinet is bookending the eerie section.
Yeah.
I was just wondering whether that homogenisation, great word.
Ooh.
Oh, someone's got the thesaurus out. Changed how you viewed how things were working.
Yeah, actually it was quite interesting. It was quite a strong contrast to the first movement being so sort of disjoint from one another to suddenly being almost as if they were playing as a quartet, as you'd traditionally imagine. And I did actually prefer the second movement, even though it was still a bit freaky and frightening, but I thought it was nicer to listen to, in my personal opinion, that I recall.
No, I'm so interested in hearing someone else's opinion. And have you heard anything by Messiaen
before this? No, I haven't. Again, remember, I am quite forgetful.
Because I sold this to you as being Debussy adjacent.
Yeah, no, I can see it from that a bit more.
However, having sold it to you that way, it is more Stravinsky adjacent.
To be fair, you sold me a free dinner. So.
Yeah,
so
I've sold this on dinner and pun-based snacks. That's how I get people to do things for me. I bribe them with food.
That's why I'm here.
Like Rizzo the Rat in the Muppets Christmas Carol, you are here mainly for the food. Anyway, shall we move on to the third movement? So that was a section from the third movement of Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time. I almost forgot what piece we were talking about there, and it's all we've been talking about. And that is Abyss of Birds for solo clarinet. Or, with our French translation,
Abîme des... Oh my goodness. There's a lot of vowels in this word.
It's all vowels.
Osio? Osio?
Abîme des Osiox.
Hmm. It's a stupid word. Just call them birds.
Bloody French.
Abîme des Oiseaux.
Des Oiseaux.
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 I know. They're like gangster birds. It's just the least gangster person ever who is choosing to spend a free night talking about Messiaen with a mathematician.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? So that was a solo clarinet piece. What do you think?
Again, it was quite a contrast to the other pieces and the other movements, and that it was just so sparse because there was just the clarinet. But it was quite beautiful as well, I thought. I thought it was a very nice effect.
I really admire the conviction that it takes to do a solo piece. Sorry, I should just say we are recording this in my house. My housemates are about. You may hear doors. This isn't just clever Foley that we're putting over this. Yeah, I mean, to say I really admire the conviction from Messiaen, an established composer who taught a lot of the greats like Stockhausen and Boulez, it sounds a little bit arrogant for me. But I mean, As a young composer, can I still put myself in the young bracket?
It's starting to get towards the upper end, but we'll let it slide.
Oh, you see, I thought the young bracket in composition runs to, like, 40.
Yeah, sure, why not?
in my 20s, I think I'm a young composer. As a young composer, I'm not sure I would entirely have the guts to put it all out there for such a long time on a solo instrument. I mean, that piece is quite long. That movement is 7.5 minutes long. Solo clarinet.
Yeah.
And also, for the clarinet, that's hard going. That's my instrument. I mean, apart from being, you know, a super cool record player, which we've talked about, my first study when I used to do performance was the clarinet. And my God, that people always are under the assumptions that the slow movements are easier. That one requires such detail and being able to sustain the notes and just have such clarity of sound that, I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's quite funny because, like, in contrast, I when I heard the first bit, I was like, oh my God, I feel really sorry for that clarinet player having to do all that. That must be really challenging. But you don't think about the sort of the effortless sounding, sustained notes and stuff.
And it's something that the clarinet can do so well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think composers always use it enough, because you can do these... You know, I'm going to wax lyrical about my instrument for a bit.
Fair enough.
You know, I might put a few other instruments down at the same time. You know, gang warfare. It happens. It's like a geekier West Side Story. less dancing. but, you know, you've got this very versatile wind instrument. It can do all these flourishes, it can do all these fast sections, and very often that's what people write for it, because it can. But the sustained notes are capable of having such depth to them, and also the characters of different registers. Sorry, registers might be a bit jargony. The characters of different... So you've got the very low notes, which have that very rich... They can be quite foghorny at the bottom. And then you've got the very clear middle section, and then you can get this very eerie, glassy sound from the high notes.
Yeah.
And it's just... It's fantastic to play with them. I love that movement.
Yeah.
I think that's come really across. Yeah. What do you think about the fact that it's about Le Oiseau? What did you think? Did you hear the birds in it?
Certainly the fast section again. I could imagine that was a chirping bird. I think the clarinet is quite a good instrument for emulating birds in a way. I can see why you'd go to that. I don't know why.
Well, in previous movements, he's done blackbird sounds. So the first movement was the clarinet was the blackbird, I think. It's quite good for that, because they've got quite... I mean, you wouldn't use it for a sweet, chirpy little bird. Maybe you'd use a flute or a piccolo for that. This sounds like really airy-fairy composer-y stuff. Well, of course, you know, a robin would be... would be played on the fife. Blackbirds are great, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
So if you're gonna give the best instrument a bird, you give them the one that just chucks moss off a roof and scuttles around about the place. They're the best.
It does look quite blackbird-like as well.
There's one just up in the corner of the room.
Yeah.
So we're able to just contemplate its wonderful glory. That's my A clarinet. That's Annie. My B flat is Clarabelle.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think this about the blackbird, though, because blackbirds are black and clarinets are also black, so I don't think it's a very deep analogy.
Nice.
Simple-minded.
Nice. Yeah.
I think that was nice to listen to as well. I didn't think that was frightening.
It did have a slightly...
There was an edge to it. I didn't think it was...
Maybe it felt less doomy and more like... I like that doomy is just how we're going to describe this from now on. Less doomy and more on edge.
Mm.
So, skittish?
Yeah.
So, moments of just... So, the static moments are more It's like we're doing a psychoanalysis here. The static moments feel like waiting, and then there's these moments of activity, and then...
Yeah.
Should we see what we can find about the actual... I hate to read things that tell you what you were supposed to hear, by the way. I absolutely hate that as a way that we talk about music. Oh, in this section, you're supposed to hear a rainstorm coming in. It's like, well, it's an abstract medium. I'll hear what I want to hear.
Yeah, but then at the same time, I suppose it gives you ideas of what to look out for. And you don't necessarily have to interpret it in the same way, I suppose. But
does it put the idea in your head?
Yeah, because if you, sort of you, people are just suggestible, I think. If someone goes, oh yeah, you should hear that, you'd be like, oh yeah.
If they say it with enough authority.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like, actually, it's not about birds. It's about unicorns. Could you not hear the unicorn in that?
Well, if it's on Wikipedia, I think it's probably fact.
I'm going to go and change all of Wikipedia now to say that Messiaen wrote about unicorns. Do you feel that you've brought up that this is a very different movement to the rest of them? Do you still feel like it's related? Does it feel like the material links?
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I think on the surface of things, I don't immediately see the link. I think if I were to listen to it a few times, I would probably pick up on sort of perhaps phrases or, I don't know, even notes, in sort of chords, if you know what I mean, that make appearances. I don't think it's like really obviously the same piece in a way.
You see,
officially,
I can hear the harmonic links. And though it's very disciplined use of harmonic material. And that is what Messiaen was known for, is stretching the use of a very small amount of harmonic material to kind of its limits. What he used was a thing called modes of limited transposition.
Ooh.
Which is very jargony in terms of what we call it. You'll like this. It's a little bit mathsy.
Oh, okay.
So normally we talk in scales that are maybe, well, 7 notes long.
Mm-hmm.
And you repeat one at the top and the bottom, so you've got 8 notes.
Yeah.
And then if you transpose them, that means moving them up and down, so that there's still the same number of gaps of notes between them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of your classic major-minor scale.
Yeah.
Stop me if I'm sounding jargony. I know that you understand most of this. But for people at home, I want to make this sound not ridiculously turn people off. I want people to listen to this music. So what Messiaen would do would be limit himself to scales that are maybe pentatonic.
Mm-hmm.
So a pentatonic scale has 5 notes.
Pentagram.
Oh, look, we've got the maths in.
Yay.
We love maths. So because those are bigger gaps between the notes, there are fewer ways that you can adapt those notes.
Okay.
So there's fewer things that you can do with...
Mm-hmm.
Transpositions, so moving them up and down, inversions, literally back to front, retrograde, back to front, inversions, inside out, all of those things. There's fewer ways, so that's what he does, because there's only a few ways that you can do it before the same notes come back around again.
Yeah.
And that's what's done throughout all the pieces, including the quartet for the End of Time.
Okay.
Well, I say all his pieces, that would be a very sweeping statement. That's what he's known for. So, has that made sense before I go on?
Yeah, definitely.
I sometimes feel that I explain things and people listening will not see that. I give them really good gestures. And then that doesn't come across. So... when I listen to all these movements next to each other, I can hear the common harmonic material, and it's got that very sparse feeling, even with the solo work. I love that solo piece so much. after that very almost analysis, again, shying away from doing an analysis because it's not what I do, it's not what you do. Yeah, let's move on. We've got a very short movement next for number 4. A section from the very short 4th movement, the interlude for violin, cello and clarinet from Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time, or in French,
ooh, intermède. I thought it just said interlude, but no.
No, that would be too easy for
that
you.
That would be too easy.
Maybe we should just make all this German for you. You'd be on it then.
Practically fluent once again.
I can only talk about ponies and poodles.
That was a good song.
Ich habe.
No, I wouldn't sing it.
Ich habe ein Pony.
Ich habe zwei Poodle. Classic.
Wow. Very short movement there. It's the trio that was used, so the violin, cello, and clarinet, that do blend quite nicely compared to if you have the piano in there, because clarinet has a lot in common kind of timbrely. Timbre being the word that we use to describe how an instrument sounds, because we like to be a bit fancy, with the cello. So clarinets and cellos paired together, very nice. What was your impression?
Again, I liked that movement. I found it quite contrasting with the other movements in that I thought that sounded a bit less doomy, a bit more. I thought it was almost sort of playful at points, a bit more cheerful. I felt like there was still hope in the world. Like, not everything's bad. I thought that was
like Brule. Maybe Brule had cracked a joke in the concert in the prison
jolly.
Of there were some interesting things in there in this very short movement. It's under 2 minutes long. I heard a bit of Mozart influence going on.
Okay.
So it's very classical style, so 1700s kind of thing. Did you hear what I'm kind of referring to?
I think I know what you mean. I think it was more what you'd expect from the classical period than what you'd necessarily expect of a 20th century piece, from my limited knowledge.
And I also felt that the cello and violin were acting almost more as an accompaniment for the clarinet. Mm. And the clarinet was bringing in some of the material from its solo movement. But there were just little sections where the strings were playing pizzicato, so they were being plucked.
Yeah.
Where it just felt very almost like a pastiche, so kind of a recreation, like a tribute using the tropes from the classical style. Please do pick me up if I'm using weird words and just not explaining.
I don't know what tropes means.
Tropes, so the things that signify. So tropes, say in film terms, it is an easier one to explain without going too jargony. So they are like what makes the film the film. So in a rom-com, the tropes are that the girl is overworked and clumsy and falls over charmingly on street corners. Not working on street corners, that would be a different kind of film.
No, Pretty Woman.
Yeah, that would be Pretty Woman. And the guy is, you know, wonderful and bumbling and Hugh Grant, and those are the tropes, and they hate each other when they meet, and
so like almost like characteristics or traits,
but so much so that they've almost become
a cliche.
Oh, look, we finish each other's sentences. That's so cute. It's almost like we've known each other far too long.
Weird.
It's got a bit personal there. Yeah, so just bringing in those kind of influences. And I imagine... Do you know what it feels like? It feels like a palate cleanser.
Do you know what it feels like? sorry. But yeah, I totally know what you mean. But you can't say song lyrics to me. I just can't help myself.
I don't know
myself.
What that song is.
I don't think I do either. I just know it is a song.
I listened to Uptown Funk the other day, and now I feel well cool.
Down with the kids.
It was with Brownies that I volunteer with. They're 7 to 10. It's very unnerving to see children singing Uptown Funk, gonna funk you up. I mean, it made my day, but... Yeah. So the palate cleanser of a movie.
Yeah, no, definitely. The interlude.
Talking of palate cleansers, is this the time to have our break, or shall we do... The next movement is a toughie. I think we need to get through it.
Well, if we're going to need emotional support...
I'm going to need food after the next one, and I will explain to you why once we've... once we've listened to a bit.
It's a good place to start.
So that was part of movement 5 of Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time. Once again, I forgot what we were talking about. I was just so overcome. And that movement is called Praise to the Eternity of Jesus, and that's for cello and piano, or it is in French.
Louange à l'Eternité de Jesus.
Nice.
Thanks.
Nice. What I feel is really nice that you bring to the French pronunciation is our slightly mank twang that we have.
You know, what can I say?
You're just making it, you know, well ardent.
You've got a gift.
I know. They must love you when you go to France.
Oh, yeah, they hate me.
Well, now we know why we needed a little palate cleanser. I feel quite emotional about that one. How are you feeling about it, Kim?
Well, I really liked that, actually. Like, it was sad, but I didn't think it was like, I'm going to kill myself sad. I think it was like, I'm going to be sad and I'm going to wallow in my sadness and I'm going to enjoy it sad. I didn't think it was like, there's no hope. I felt hope. And like, at the end, I thought it sort of, like, there was this sort of a climax in the middle, well, towards the end. Middle end, it's not the same. and then after that, I felt like, actually, I think I'm not going to be sad anymore. It almost, like, sort of went a bit...
Like acceptance.
Yeah, exactly. Not exactly happiness, but I think acceptance is a good...
I find that movement tragic. I find it so... I was working on a document in the work that I have to do to currently supplement being a composer, because, you know, early days, sometimes you have to have another job. So I was working on this document, and it was something to do with legislation, listening to Messiaen, and had to pause to consider how tragic the music was. I will not be listening to Messiaen again at work. It is not good for my productivity just to pause to consider how tragic it is. One of the interesting things I find about that movement is that the cello is the instrument being used with the piano accompaniment. It's not very high, but it's quite high on the cello.
It could have been a violin, really. I thought some of it, I sort of assumed some of it was, but...
No, entirely cello with the piano accompaniment, and they're interesting... There's a very interesting thing happens when you go to the higher end of the cello, this tension kind of builds, because it doesn't feel like the natural register. When you use lower down on the cello, you know, the area that people are very used to hearing, it's got this nice kind of depth and body to the sound, and you go higher up and and that depth disappears, and then it gets this very overwrought sound.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean, actually. Yeah. Yeah, because I was like, this violin sounds a bit strange. That's what I thought.
Well, maybe that's also playing with your expectations.
Mm. Yeah.
Because timbrely, to use that word again, it wasn't like the violin. It was... So it's playing with the accepted use of instruments and building on that. And there was a very nice muted section as well, where it just got this kind of... So you can put mutes on string instruments and you can dampen strings so you can hold them down slightly so they don't resonate as much. You can do an incredible amount of what we call extended techniques for strings, so that's beyond the normal use of the instrument. So muting an instrument, or I suspect possibly dampening in that case, because mutes make a big noise when you put a mute on, it kind of goes clonk, clonk as you take it on and off. So you just, it kind of removes some of, a note isn't made up of one note. A note is made up of what we call the harmonic spectrum. So you have the note that you hear, and then you have what are partials that make up the different parts of that note. The best comparison would be colours.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're mixing, when you're mixing a purple, apparently that's the only colour I can think of, possibly because there are Parma violets in my eye line, and I'm always consumed by the need for Parma violets when they're there. When you've got purple, it's not a solid colour purple, it's a mix of, oh god, red and blue. Oh, that's like primary school.
They're called primary colours.
Thanks. So it's a mix of those different colours, and that's what a note is.
Okay, that's...
So you're not just hearing
one
note, you're hearing all the different things that go into it. And then you can dampen some of those, so you're hearing other ones stronger than others.
Okay.
And also things don't resonate as much, so you don't get so much depth to the note. So there was some of that going on, but... Oh, I found it bleak.
The start of that, I could picture, again, a film, like someone like sitting in a bath, feeling sad about something that's happened, and like a montage of...
I love the stories that you bring into these.
I have a vivid imagination, what can I say?
Also, there is no resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So normally, in Western music with chords... Yeah. So with collections of notes, with chords, I think that's a standard term that I can use. You move through different ones and then it settles on what we call the resolution, which is the expected place for this to end.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can play with that and you can do the unexpected.
Mm.
So move it upwards, move it to a different place. This just doesn't have a resolution.
Mm.
And that's something that Messiaen does, is he doesn't try and resolve harmonies.
Yeah.
So for me that felt, you were saying about acceptance.
Yeah.
For me that felt very like, well, this is how it is. There isn't going to be a nice ending to this.
Yeah.
It's not going to be neat and packaged up. It's just going to end here. And there seemed to be a couple of, not exactly false endings, but times when you thought that it had finished.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the piano comes in again.
Yeah, exactly. I think he uses that quite a lot. There's been a lot of times when I thought, oh no.
He didn't like resolutions at all.
No, I can.
If you were into psychology and posthumously diagnosing people with different things, maybe you could read into that. But gosh, it's effective.
Yeah.
What did you think of the piano part? Because the piano part just does basically the same thing all the way through. It just kind of goes plod.
Very much an accompaniment.
Yeah, kind of. And just on the beat.
I thought some of the chords, actually, that we used were very beautiful. There was a couple of times I was just like, oh. You know, there's some chords that just make you go, oh.
I think when I was saying a Debussy adjacent to you, this is the most. I also thought of Saint-Saëns, Camille Saint-Saëns, another French composer, when this came on. But there's very... sustained melodic lines, which he was very good at using, which he was very known for. But those plodding, for want of a better word, that sounds so derogatory. That piano accompaniment that is just hitting the beat. It's
reliable.
Like a donkey. Do you think the repetition means that you can focus on the chords and the harmony more?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So it's
it wasn't distracting from the...
It also means that a very small difference is very noticeable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So, I'm feeling like I need a snack.
Yeah.
So this part of the show comes out of... this is basically where the idea for the show came from, which is something that I like to do, and then a friend of mine started putting the titles to it. Hello to James, if you're listening. yes, I am crediting you with this. It's a game I like to play where I match composers' names to baked goods. So this is the snacks part of Symphonies and Snacks. And I like to, you know, I've been theming it. So I've got a couple of options for you today. But you also came up with a very good non-related composer just now.
If inspiration hits, you've just got to go with it. Oh. So you guys might be familiar with Bach. Right? Pretty famous.
Know of his work.
Yeah.
Big fan.
I was thinking Barclava.
Ah, oh, nice. Like
the famous... Oh, I don't know where it's from, actually.
Baroque.
No.
Oh, sorry.
The Baclava.
Oh, it's Turkish.
Turkish, that's the one. I just saw it on the Bake Off. The Bake Off.
Ah, Bake Off. This is where I like to play this as well. When Bake Off's going on, I just sit and come up with baking composers.
Yeah, there you go.
I keep on trying it on Twitter. If I keep trying it, maybe if people start listening to this podcast, other people will join in. And it won't just be me tweeting into the ether. So I've got two options today.
Okay.
One's a stronger pun than the other. The first one is Quartet for the End of Time Out Bars. Yeah. Other chocolate bars are available, but don't fit with the joke that I'm making. And then the other one's stronger.
Yeah.
Right? You ready?
Yeah.
You ready for this?
I'm ready.
I'm really proud.
I'm ready.
I even texted it to someone earlier, just like, I'm so proud. Eton Messiaen. I'm so proud.
Amazing.
I mean, I say I've got Eton Messiaen. Currently, I have the ingredients for Eton Messiaen. So I have a packet of meringues.
Meringuean. It's not as good, is it?
No, not quite there. So I've got a packet of meringues. I've got frozen raspberries in the freezer, because that's where you keep... That's where frozen things are kept. They're frozen because they're not in season.
Mm.
So, and I refuse...
It's not seasonal.
Yeah. And I haven't got cream, because I couldn't remember whether you liked cream, and I care.
I'm not a big cream fan, actually.
I care deeply about my guests. So I've got yogurt. So it's not even real eating mess. So let's take a pause and
a time out.
Oh, I love what you've done there. And have our quick snacks. So we've got our quartet for the end of time out bars here. We are going to review it because, you know, what's more fun than listening to two women eating chocolate?
I thought that timeouts used to come in two fingers rather than just the one finger.
Does it feel like it's giving you the finger?
I feel shortchanged. Well, I suppose we do have an 8-pack, so I'd have two fingers if I wanted. But yeah, that sounds bad, doesn't it?
Oh!
So I'm just going to eat this and shut up now.
Look, I'm not entirely sure what this biscuit thinks it is.
It's quite wafer, isn't it?
There's wafer, and there's a middle section which is like a whisper. If these were bigger, thinner, or if there were two of them,
I think I'd be much happier with this chocolate bar.
Very nice, actually.
We'll see how this section goes, because at the moment it is just us eating.
Time Out contains milk, wheat, gluten and soya, for those interested. Ooh, multi-pack bars are not for resale.
Damn it! We're just going to make a profit. You know, like people used to do at school? They'd buy pick and mix and then sell them on for a pound.
Oh, yeah.
Genius.
Especially after they stopped you having good food at school.
Bloody Jamie Oliver took the good food.
I know. I must have chips, sausage roll and gravy for my lunch.
Pasta and cheese used to be 50 pence.
Oh. Yeah, I used to do that. I'd get pasta and cheese and a little bottle of water.
And then you could spend the rest of your money on things from the vending machine.
Well, I didn't used to get pocket money, so I just, like, only spent half of my dinner money, because I used to get £2 for my dinner. So I just saved the rest.
Nice.
Screw you, parents.
I don't think I'm going to run away and make the Eton Messiaen.
It seems like quite a lot of effort, even though it is a very good pun.
It's effort for the pun. I mean, Eton Mess is not an effort of a pudding. That's the pudding that you serve at the dinner parties where you want to... Oh, I sound really fancy now. That's the pudding that you serve at dinner parties when you want people to think that you've made loads of effort. But you haven't. You've just bought things and thrown them in. And then sometimes, you know, that's the option I should take, but instead I will stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning making opera cake. Just to prove I can. I'm that person. That was a weird time in my life. After our little snackettes.
Our time out. I'm pushing it.
Yeah, we're pushing that bar now. We should maybe move on.
Okay.
We have 3 more movements left. We've done 5 of 8. I was worried that we were not going to have enough to talk about. I did not realise when I glib is the right word, texted you that we were going to do Messiaen. I forgot that it was an 8-movement piece. Not going to lie. But, you know, we're carrying on through. How are you finding it?
I'm enjoying it. Very good.
Do you feel you've learnt more about yourself as a person?
Oh, certainly.
You've come on this great journey.
I've grown. not physically, because that's, I think, impossible. I'm really quite tall.
Kim is a giant, and then she makes fun of other people.
Well, because they're so tiny.
It's not our fault.
Kind of is, though. I mean, I grew, so...
Well, look, something happened at school. You carried on growing. You took all the nutrients.
We weren't planted.
They don't know that.
We were in the same conditions. You should have used all that sunlight and soil to its best effect.
Okay. Movement 5. 5? 6. I can't
six,
do
seven,
numbers.
Eight. It's cool.
This is why I brought a mathematician along. So that was their 6th movement in Messiaen's quartet for the end of time, Dance of Fury for the 7 trumpets, and that features the full quartet. In French it is...
Dance de la Fureur pour les 7 trompettes.
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 Oh no, trompettes.
Just can't read.
It's an added layer to...
Yep.
Well, what did you think?
It was quite a contrast. I'm saying this about every single one, but like, quite unusual to have all the instruments playing in unison for the whole thing. It's quite striking.
Almost completely throughout. What kind of effect did you feel that it brought to it? They're moving almost as one.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult to say. It was one of these things I couldn't quite put my finger on how I felt about it in a way. I was just like, I just found it interesting almost. It didn't really evoke much feeling in me, like, for example, the sad movement, as I'm going to call it.
The all is lost movement. I think, do you know what's slightly ruined music for me? It's this level of study that I've done. And, you know, you listen to something like that and you go, bloody hell, that's difficult. How are they all doing that? That must have taken hours of rehearsals.
Yeah, I thought that as well. I was like, I'm very impressed that they all could play it at the same time perfectly.
And then you're like, so sometimes I have to listen to things more than once. There's a fantastic Stockhausen piece called Gripen that I went to see at the South Bank Centre, and they did two performances of it because it's a piece for three orchestras and three conductors all moving, and this piece kind of swarming around them. And the first time you're watching it going, how is this working? And then the second time you can listen to it.
Yeah.
Because you've worked out how it all fits together, and then you can go, okay, I can enjoy this now. And I do that slightly with pieces. So this one, I was like, bloody hell, this is great. This is so difficult. But I did have some actual musical thoughts beyond.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So again, very Stravinsky-esque.
Mm-hmm.
I disappeared off halfway through and went to my alphabetized repertoire stash and found this piece, which is three pieces for solo clarinet, which is by Stravinsky. I think it's 1919 or 1920. And there's a piece in there that I had for a clarinet exam. It's their third movement, and these are for solo clarinet. And it's those very similar kind of angular rhythms. So it's very angular, the writing. And then also what we call syncopated rhythms. So syncopation is that kind of jazzy sound, for want of a better way. Does that describe it enough?
Yeah, kind of off the beat almost.
Yeah. And also, very similarly, this Stravinsky piece. If you mess up in it, you are screwed. You are absolutely screwed. And I remember in this exam, I messed up halfway through and I had to just start again from the beginning. And it was hugely humiliating. But there was no way to bring it back once it's gone wrong. And I feel that this movement has that same quality. Another thought I had was, halfway through, there's a false ending. And I went to switch it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it started again.
Loves doing that.
Oh. And then I wrote, is this a retrograde? It's not. But a retrograde is when you play something backwards. Oh, so okay. When the second part started,
yeah,
I was like, has he just put the entire thing back to back?
Okay.
Like a mirror down.
Yeah.
But then he played with that because he didn't. He didn't do that at all.
Made you think it.
He made me think it. He fooled me. Damn you, Messingham. And then my other thought was slightly more descriptive. It felt to me like a moth trying to get at a light bulb, or a fly trying to get at a window.
Yeah, I see what you mean, actually.
These flurries of movement of trying to get at it.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I think that's why I felt it difficult to identify with it in a way. It was... I could picture that now you've said it.
It was almost manic.
Yeah.
The way it was going on it. And then those moments of harmony, because they're not there throughout the whole thing, I think they have so much more impact, those very small bits.
Yeah.
And this really lovely, glassy, false ending, which uses... I think it uses some harmonics on the strings. So harmonics is when you force the higher-up bits to come through by not... It's a particular string technique. You can also use it on flutes, and there's a couple of other instruments that are able to do that. But on strings, you get that very glassy sound, which is really lovely when used well. When used badly, it's a cliche. Yeah.
I thought it was quite interesting how he uses dynamics, because when I think of dynamics, you sort of... I remember using them, but sort of in a subtle way, whereas it's very much like, now it's loud, now it's quiet. You notice it rather than sort of trying to disguise the fact from the...
I mean, are you thinking, because your other instrument is the sax, are you thinking more for the recorders?
Yes.
The recorder is much more limited in what it can do. If you push it too hard either way.
Yeah, that's true. There's not such a big contrast, right?
It's going to go out of tune. So it's going to sound... Well, I don't think I need to explain out of tune.
No.
But instruments such as Messiaen is using here have this huge dynamic range. So dynamics, I didn't explain that, is how loud or quiet this is. So they have this capability of going really loud to really quiet very, very quickly. Yeah. And he does play with that really well. Because also when you've had something very loud and you go to... And you go to what we call pianissimo. So they're done piano forte. So piano is quiet, is soft, and forte is very strong and loud. And we use Italian terms for this. So when you go to the pianissimo, it makes you listen more.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
Yeah. Snippet from Movement 7 of Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time, entitled, fantastically, Tangle of Rainbows for the Angel Who Announces the End of Time. Or, you ready?
Fully darks unseal, pour la anger, qui announce la fin du temps.
Nice. I feel you're really... You've just really captured
the
French insouciance.
I could have a striped jumper, a beret and a string of onions around my neck, right?
Oh, and you would be pulling it off.
There we go.
So, straight off the bat, I'm surprised this isn't the finale. I'm surprised it's not the final movement. Because it feels like a combination of all the other movements.
Yeah, no, I thought that as well. Why does he frighten us like that with these false endings and then like this heart attack? Like, oh, I'm going to finish.
There was a theme in that, and I'd made a note. The theme was the second part is the theme of a murderer following you down the road in a car. Just da 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 da. And then at the end. There is what seems to be, it is so similar to the Psycho theme tune, that is what Herman must have been listening to. I'm not saying it was a conscious lifting, I'm just saying it's so similar that must have been a huge influence. And that's Bernard Herrmann, who wrote the Hitchcock's soundtracks, most famously for Psycho, in this shower scene. But also, you know, his work has this very sparse quality, so I wouldn't be surprised if Messiaen was a huge influence there. Yeah, that was my main thing. And why bring back the tragic theme? Because I just sit there going, oh, all's lost. Ah, murderer!
Yeah, it's very strange that it involves like this sort of Tangle of Rainbows title when it was kind of, I don't know, there wasn't very much rainbowy about it for me. I thought it was all like doom. Well, actually, the first bit was quite.
Wait, I haven't read Revelations. I'm not going to claim to have read the Bible cover to cover, but isn't Revelations quite doomy?
I think I have heard that actually.
Yeah, the Tangle of Rainbows. Well, it's an interesting thing because Messiaen does talk in colour. A lot. It's something he does use to describe his work and describe where it's come from, is this describing things in terms of colour. So I'm not surprised to see that descriptive title for this. I would not say it's lovely, fluffy rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean by that. The colour of the music rather than, rainbows.
Yeah.
Which is just what it makes me think of.
But it's rainbow, a tangle of rainbows.
Yeah, tangle isn't really a very positive word, is it, generally?
What's happening to the leprechauns? Do you know, I think I've probably lost all musical integrity. I've ruined my reputation.
Oh, well.
Well, they had to learn sometimes, didn't they? I think it's the fact that I giggle whenever anyone talks about a musical climax. Just putting it out there.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough.
Do we have anything more to say about Psycho Killer?
I don't think I do. Do you?
No, just don't do that. Our hearts can't take it.
Very jumpy.
You proper jumped. Right, we're on the home stretch now. Okay. It's the final movement. Let's have a bit of a listen. That was an excerpt from the final movement of Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time called Praise to the Immortality of Jesus for Violin and Piano, or in French,
Louange à l'Immortalité de Jesus.
Do you know what? I love you doing those so much that every time I get a French composer, I might just call you up to do that.
Well, I don't know if you can afford me, but...
I know, it's cost me a lot of food tonight to have you here. So this is solo violin and piano. This is the closing movement. How do you feel about it?
Well, it was quite sad and beautiful again. It was sort of I don't want to say anti-climax, but like you said, the movement before was much more grand and...
And it was a combination of everything.
Yeah.
It seemed very strange to be bringing in new material for the final movement.
Yeah.
Although not all new.
Yeah, it was reminiscent of the sad movement.
This is an arrangement of part of an earlier organ work, but I feel it's so well written for the instruments that he had. It's so well written for the violin, and it uses that... Violins have this capability to be over emotional as an instrument because you can do this thing called vibrato where you move up and down from the note. I just did a gesture that looked very rude to demonstrate vibrato. So that kind of wavering sound.
Yeah, like a wobbly note.
Yeah, which gives it this very emotional feeling. And it struck me that a lot of the things that we consider cliches now in the use of the instrument were very new around this time, and they've become cliches after this period of music.
Yeah.
But there was also that very similar repeated piano thing that was in the sad movement. but there was an interesting echo effect that was done on the piano, so you didn't get the... Oh, I keep on saying plonk. You didn't get the plonking sound. You got this kind of duh-duh, like a stuttering.
Yeah.
Like an echo in the cave, which... What did you think of that?
Yeah, I thought it was nice. Again, I thought it had more of an effect being violin and accompaniment than... Well, it's not really a quartet when there's only two of them playing, right?
Yeah.
I guess with two playing... Well, duet, that's the word. More of a... Yeah. The violin was the star of the show, in effect. But it wouldn't have been the same without the piano, obviously. I think it work together.
We've talked all the way through about these false endings that Messiaen has given us. Do you think, in effect, the entire work had a false ending?
Perhaps.
And then a coda. So a coda is what, you know, we call an ending of a piece.
Yeah.
But do you think this acted as that? Like an epilogue.
An epilogue.
That's the word.
Yeah. Very much was an epilogue, I think.
I feel we got the epilogue, and I feel that we got the... You know when you said you'd come to acceptance in the solo cello work?
Yeah.
I feel that the violin brought that feeling of acceptance.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, acceptance. It wasn't an ending so much as an acceptance again. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was this very lovely, final, very high, glassy note. I'm not sure if it was harmonic... might have been a harmonica. I don't have the score in front of me, and it kind of faded out.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we'd been expecting an explosive
final ending. Yeah. And you just got this lovely, sustained sound. Yeah. I mean, the piece is praised the immortality of Jesus. And I can kind of... I can see where he's coming from biblically. I feel very wary of commenting on biblical implications, religious implications, but this feeling of moving towards something greater.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, the end isn't the end. It would continue somewhere. Gosh, that got deep.
Yeah, but I think it fits very much with... Well, obviously he was very influenced by his religion, so I think it's reasonable to draw conclusions like that.
And they are all religious titles. It's based on the Book of Revelation. So I think that's all we have time for. Kim is sat by the door with her hat on, ready to go. Thank you very much for listening. Have you enjoyed being here, Kim?
I have very much enjoyed being here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I've enjoyed having you here. I always like to spend time in your company. If you would like to follow the show on Twitter, we are at Symphony Snack. I don't quite know what we'll be tweeting yet. I say we, it's me. And if you would like to follow me personally on Twitter, I am at LA Harrison Music, all one word. I mainly tweet about cake, composition and girl guiding. There's the three things that summarise me right there. Can people follow you anywhere?
I'm not on the Twitter. I mean, I have a website if you... Well, okay... Cambridge Maths Department have a website. You could just Google my name if you're really that interested. I mean, with the word maths, but
also don't follow Kim because she will. Well, you could follow Kim, but she will call the police
or just beat you up.
Oh yeah, she's well hard. She could take you.
Very well hard, yeah.
Thank you again for listening. I've been Lucy Ann Harrison. I still am Lucy Ann Harrison. I don't know why they sign off like that on the radio. This is Symphony and Snacks. Here's some more of Messiaen to see us out.